This morning, I'm going to kind of focus on three people in the Old Testament who kind of answered that question, that calling from God that we just sang about. And, you know, we're all called by God. It's just that some of us listen better than others, don't we? We all have different personalities, and it takes different things for God to get through to us. And those of you who are parents should know exactly what I'm talking about, because you know that what works with one child doesn't always work with another. We have two children, and with our son, I thought I must be an excellent parent, because, boy, all you had to do was look at him funny, and he just did what you needed him to do. Then we had our daughter, and that was a whole different story. And she has a mind of her own. She's very independent, and she could look at you and say, "I'm not sitting in timeout." And you just had to learn how to deal with that. So, and aren't we like that? You know, some of us go along very quickly with what God's trying to tell us, and others of us sometimes go kicking and screaming along with what God wants. And so, but we're human, right? And God knows that we don't always do exactly what he wants when he wants it, but he doesn't give up on the plan. And so I'm going to be talking about Moses, Samuel, and Isaiah. So we meet Moses in Exodus, and in chapter 3, God has appeared to him in a pretty powerful way. It's in the form of a burning bush, and the bush, there's a flame coming out, although it's not consuming. There's no ash. The bush is still there, and a pretty amazing thing, and God got his attention very quickly with that. And then God told him what he wanted him to do, and to go back to Egypt and lead the Israelites. Well, Moses wasn't very thrilled with that idea. And so in verse 11, he says, "Who am I to appear before Pharaoh? Who am I to lead the people of Israel out of Egypt?" God answered, "I will be with you, and this is your sign that I am the one who has sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God at this very mountain." But Moses protested, "If I go to the people of Israel and tell them, 'The God of your ancestors has sent me to you,' they will ask me, 'What is his name?' Then what should I tell them?" God replied to Moses, "I am who I am. Say this to the people of Israel, 'I am has sent me to you.'" God also said to Moses, "Say this to the people of Israel, 'Yahweh, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you.'" And you know, Moses had made many mistakes in his life. And, you know, this is Karen reading into it, but I think that maybe one reason he had doubted his ability to lead is because of the mistakes that he had made. And sometimes we feel that way, don't we? "Oh, I can't do it. I've messed up before." And it's interesting, because if you read on in here, Moses keeps, they use the words protested and pleaded. He just, one excuse after another as to why he can't say yes to God. And three different times in chapters 3 and 4, Moses does this. And in my paraphrase, I thought, you know, he's saying, "I'm not worthy, I'm not believable, and I'm not a good speaker. So I'm not your man, God. I can't do this." And in his very last attempt to dissuade God, Moses just, again, it uses the word pleads. So he's begging. It's like, "No, please don't make me do this. Lord, please send anyone else." That's exactly what my Bible says. Send anyone else, just not me. But God doesn't let Moses off the hook. He does agree, however, to allow Aaron, the brother of Moses, to assist him. But it's clear that Moses is the one who's supposed to be the leader among the Israelites. And then I'm going to move ahead to 1 Samuel chapter 3, starting with verse 1. We meet Samuel. He is, unlike Moses was a full-grown adult. He was married and had children. Samuel is younger. Samuel is living in the temple with the priest because his mother had been unable to have children, and she begged God for a baby, because in that culture, a woman without a child was, you know, way down at the bottom of the social ladder. And God blessed her with a son, and she had said, if you will give me a child, I will dedicate him to you. And that's exactly what she did. When Samuel was very young, she took him to the temple. He lived with Eli the priest. So in chapter 3, it says, the boy Samuel served the Lord by assisting Eli. Now in those days, messages from the Lord were very rare, and visions were quite uncommon. I thought that was interesting. I hadn't paid attention to that before. The people weren't hearing very much from God. Probably not because of him, but because of what was going on in them. One night, Eli, who was almost blind by now, had gone to bed. The lamp of God had not yet gone out, and Samuel was sleeping in the tabernacle near the ark of God. Suddenly, the Lord called out, Samuel! Yes, Samuel replied. What is it? He got up and ran to Eli. Here I am. Did you call me? I didn't call you, Eli replied. Go back to bed. So he did. Then the Lord called out again, Samuel. Again, Samuel got up and went to Eli. Here I am. Did you call me? I didn't call you, my son, Eli said. Go back to bed. And verse 7 is very interesting too. Samuel did not yet know the Lord, because he had never had a message from the Lord before. So this is all new to Samuel. So the Lord called a third time, and once more Samuel got up and went to Eli. Here I am. Didn't you call me? Then Eli realized it was the Lord who was calling the boy. So he said to Samuel, go and lie down again. And if someone calls again, say, speak, Lord, your servant is listening. So Samuel went back to bed. And the Lord came and called as before, Samuel, Samuel. And Samuel replied, speak, your servant is listening. So here we find that Samuel is young and lacking experience, but he's willing to follow instruction. He didn't argue with Eli. He did exactly what Eli told him to do. And although it takes him a few times to realize that it's God's voice calling to him, Samuel is willing to listen and replies in a positive manner. Right away, he says, your servant is listening. As a result, God uses him to lead the people for many, many years. And if you read in 1 and 2 Samuel into Kings, Samuel becomes very influential to the Israelites. He's obedient and God uses him. The third person is Isaiah. And I didn't know a lot about Isaiah. I do like the book of Isaiah. It's amazing to me how well the prophecy that is in Isaiah is so completely fulfilled in Jesus. But I didn't know much about his background. And when I was reading about him, it said that during the time of his life, Israel was experiencing civil war. And it was the breakup of Judah and Israel was going on during Isaiah's lifetime. So it was a very tumultuous time. And in chapter 6 of Isaiah, starting with verse 1, it says, it was in the year King Uzziah died that I saw the Lord. He was sitting on a lofty throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Okay, so Moses had a burning bush. Samuel just had the voice of the Lord calling. And Isaiah has a vision. Attending him were mighty seraphim, each having six wings. With two wings they covered their faces, with two they covered their feet, and with two they flew. They were calling out to each other, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of heaven's armies. The whole earth is filled with his glory." Their voices shook the temple to its foundations, and the entire building was filled with smoke. Then I said, "It's all over. I am doomed, for I am a sinful man. I have filthy lips, and I live among a people with filthy lips. Yet I have seen the King, the Lord of heaven's armies." Then one of the seraphim flew to me with a burning coal he had taken from the altar with a pair of tongs. He touched my lips with it and said, "See, this coal has touched your lips. Now your guilt is removed and your sins are forgiven." It's interesting that both Moses and Isaiah, adults who had lived longer lives, their initial response is, "I can't do it. I'm not worthy." Samuel, the younger boy, was, "What do you have for me, Lord?" I don't know. Maybe that's why Jesus said we need to become like little children, huh? But in verse 8 of chapter 6, it says, "Then I heard the Lord asking, 'Whom should I send as a messenger for this people? Who will go for us?' I said, 'Here I am. Send me.'" And that's where that song we sang has references to Samuel, but it's actually Isaiah who says, "Here I am, send me." And, you know, at first, Isaiah is feeling incredibly unworthy. Do you ever feel unworthy? It's like, no, I can't do it. And when faced with the holiness of God, he's convicted of his sin. And I don't know about you, but the way that Satan gets to me is, he reminds me of the stupid things I've done in my past. And that can get me down. It's like, how could I have done that? I was so dumb. And that is a really great way for Satan to just bind us up and make us ineffective. And so, you know, and Isaiah is calling out, "I'm doomed. I'm sinful." But what does God do? He forgives Isaiah and has that burning coal symbolically placed upon his lips to let him know that he is truly forgiven and he's no longer considered guilty. And that's what God's done for us. He will forgive us, and he doesn't consider us guilty. But immediately after that, God issues a call for action. You know, and what does Isaiah do? Now, he doesn't argue with God like Moses. He says, "Here I am." Immediately, he's in a positive affirmation. "Here I am, send me." He doesn't hesitate right away. He is willing to do what God requests. Have you ever heard God speak to you? He's doing it all the time. It's just sometimes we don't want to listen. Sometimes we're too busy, or we're too involved in our plan, which I'm really good at, because Karen's the organizer, just ask Dave. And we don't always hear. But there was one time when Dave and I had been married for several years, when I heard God speak to me, and it was almost an audible voice. And he had a very simple question, and I can still remember, it was worded exactly like this: "Are you willing to do whatever it is I ask you to do?" My reply to God's question was fairly immediate, just like Isaiah's, and it too was very simple, and I gave God a very firm, resounding no. And you know what? And that's the truth. I just said no. Maybe my daughter really does have a little bit of me in her, huh? But I figured it didn't make any sense to lie to God. He knew already what was in my heart. He knew that I wasn't willing, I wasn't ready. But he had to ask the question. And then, though, I didn't stop at no, okay? I did go on to say, I'm not willing now, but help me to get to the point where I can say yes to your question. And you know what? God did just that. He provided opportunities and experiences one at a time, because I was hesitant. So one at a time, he helped me grow. He helped me gain the abilities and the confidence that I would need to fulfill the calling that he placed upon me. He did this until I got to the point where I really could say, yes, Lord, if this is what you want me to do. And sometime asked Dave about his calling and to the ministry and what that took. And he will tell you, he had to wait for me. So I want to ask you, though, how do you respond to God's call? Do you offer excuses like Moses? Does it take you a while to realize that God is even speaking to you like it was with Samuel? Do you cry out for God because you feel unworthy, as Isaiah did? Or are you like Karen and just flat out say no? But no matter what your initial response is, the important thing is that you stick with God. Allow him to speak to you. Allow him to move in your heart. Allow him to change your life. Now that means letting go, and Karen's not always really good at that. I am a type A, I want to be in control kind of person. And sometimes God has to pry it one finger at a time out of my hands. So I have to be willing to allow him to do these things. And if you do that, and if you follow wherever he leads you, and you do the things that he's asking you to do, he will use you. He will move you. He will change your heart. In case you're wondering why this is so important, why should we move out of our comfortable spot in our lives? And I, like the rest of you, I like to be comfortable. And sometimes God pulls me over here. Kind of like our conversation this morning, we were saying, we should play fruit basket up one day, one Sunday, and everybody sit in a different place. Because how many of us sit in the exact same spot every Sunday? Okay. We like our comfort. We like our routine. Kids are the same way at school. Anytime we do something different, boy, it really just throws a wrench in the works. But why should we move out of this spot of comfort? And I'm going to tell you, because church, the world is watching. And it's waiting to see what God's people do in response to the needs around us. And there was a Facebook post that I read just in the last 2 weeks. And it really brought this point home to me. The young man who wrote it, I taught with him for a few years, and he's not a believer, but his words were a very sharp reminder to me that as Christians, we really need to put our money where our mouth is. We absolutely need to heed the admonition of James that we've been hearing Dave preach about and follow up our faith with action. And I'm going to share to you what he posted. Okay. Now, he did not use profanity. He used the, you know, how they do the little symbols in place of it. Okay. So this is what he wrote. Ladies and gentlemen, please don't be surprised if some people are saying blankety blank thoughts and prayers these days. People are hurt and people want change to make things better. And thoughts and prayers, in quotes, for too many has become just lip service. Do something to change the world with action while you send those thoughts and prayers. Ouch. That one hurt. So I'm going to ask you, does it look to the people around us as if our faith is words only and not supported by our behavior? Is the love that God has for all people? He loves us, but he loves those people out there. Dave talks about those who belong to him and those who don't, who will in the future belong to him. And is that love truly apparent in us? Or are we just wrapped in our own little cocoons, doing our own thing, and conveniently ignoring God's call? Today, I challenge you to open your ears, to actively listen. And with my students, you know, this active listening is important because words can go in our ears and not really make a difference. And I tell my students, listening is actually, it's a physical whole body experience because we need to engage every part of us in order to really hear. So are you actively listening for God's voice? I challenge you to seek his vision for your life and to be willing to step out, even if it's like me and it's just a baby step. Because God didn't immediately plop me into the role of pastor's wife. It took a lot of baby steps. Allow God to lead you and to change you. I remember a high school reunion where I was talking to one of my fellows, students, and he got voted the one who changed the most, you know, and for him it was a lot of because of his physical appearance. You know, his hair was snow white, and you know, which was most of us still had color in our hair. And he said, "Well, is it a good thing to be voted the one who is most changed?" And I thought about that, and later I emailed him and I said, "Yes, it's a good thing to be the one who's changed the most. Who wants to be that person that we were back when we were 18 years old, 20 years later?" Okay? Allow God to change you, to mold you, so that you will truly be his image to the people who inhabit your world, that little place where you are. That then you will truly make a difference for him. And then you can say, like Isaiah, "Here I am, send me." Thank you.